to Stay Cool Forever,
the podcast where we are analyzing 90s movies from 2019 and asking, can a movie from the 90s stay cool forever? This week, to sort of segue from the Oscar movies that we had done last month, we're going into movies that feature Los Angeles.
Woo!
And we're doing Heat, the 1995
Michael... Los Angeles? You saying that on purpose? Is that how you say it?
I'm just trying something new.
Okay.
How is
it? Support it.
You're the native, and I'm going to consult you a lot on this movie, so how do you pronounce it?
Los Angeles. Angeles.
Angeles.
Angeles. Yes. Jewish... No, Los Angeles.
Right, French.
Yeah. I only call it the City of the Angels. I can't wait to see what you reach out to me about in this one. I tried really hard to think about all the locations, and we'll just jump right into it. Most of the important restaurant scenes aren't there anymore.
Okay.
They're like Beverly Hills restaurants.
I see. Are you talking about that gigantic diner where De Niro met his love interest?
I have a feeling that one is Norm's.
Hmm.
No, it's too nice. Later on, there's the one that's Norm's when all the criminals get back together.
After the heist at the beginning.
I feel like that's Norm's. It might not be. But where Pacino and De Niro get together, that is Beverly Hills.
Okay.
And when he meets that chick, that's definitely way too nice to be Norm's.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume it's probably like Culver City or something like that.
Okay.
Seems most of the movie takes place on that side, especially with all the beach locales and the beautiful homes these people have.
I do notice in a lot of movies based in L.A., they like to pretend that the beach and the nice houses are just a skip away from downtown. It's all right there.
Just go right home. Mm-hmm. Just get home. It takes no time at all.
Yeah,
you've got the 110 over there and then the 210 that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's fine. We're okay.
They did use all LA sets though for the exteriors, especially the downtown stuff.
So we worked downtown and it was interesting to look at the skyline in certain parts. I was trying really hard to see if that was Fifth and Grand.
I thought I recognized it as that, but that was at least 20 years ago, so obviously it looks a lot different.
Me too. I thought so too. I thought, I wonder if that's it, but it seemed like it was more you know, where we went to lunch a couple days ago. It's in more of that area, I think. More Figueroa in 6th and 7th over there, which is about where we were. And so I think we were a couple blocks away. You could see the one Wilshire building that was around. There was the old U.S. Bank building before it became... So U.S. Bank had an older building, and it was a smaller one like that one Wilshire building. It was called the U.S. Bank building. And then U.S. Bank bought the largest building in downtown Los Angeles. And that became the U.S. Bank building that everyone knows with the lights on top that change color. And that was the largest one until recently, as you know, when it's the Korean Air building now.
Right. Did you recognize the park that Tom Sizemore had the child hostage in? It wasn't so much a park. It was like an office building that had a bunch of trees around those kind of circular...
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I was really trying to think if it was... Because it was like Fig and Sixth, I think a lot of that area has... It's undergone a lot of development due to the LA Live and Staples Center, you know, and the whole sports area. And I think that's kind of where a lot of that took place.
Okay.
So... A lot of the shots are super dated. There's been a lot of building.
Yeah.
What's the word?
Construction.
Construction. There you go.
Yeah. As far as being dated, I mean, obviously it's a different LA. It looks different, less recognizable from today. But I was kind of impressed just overall that it didn't... You know, you watch The Wire... And it's all about cell phones and burners and pagers, and people are still using payphones. And you're like, okay, this sort of story could only have existed in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Whereas this one doesn't quite give itself away so obviously to that. Like, not a lot of the planning isn't taking place with or without pagers or cell phones or, you know, cassette tape, wiretaps, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, a lot of those things are just kind of, they're being tapped.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to show the tech.
Yeah.
A lot of payphones, but, and pager use. However, that got me thinking, I really, really miss the telephone. Just the weight of, like, a telephone.
Mm-hmm.
And talking on it. And the sound of clicking it down.
Yeah.
You know, so famed Stay Cool Forever all-star David Neck, he recently was telling me how he will receive calls at his work from telemarketers, and he'll answer it, and then he'll slowly drop the phone back down onto the thing.
Just that perfect amount of weight between...
Exactly. Yeah. And that, like, that click, that weighted click sound,
mm-hmm.
you really can't recreate anymore.
Yeah. It's like a very unique to payphone, landline, old,
yeah.
old phone designs.
And it, you know, it really got me thinking. Like, you remember walking around with the phone?
Mm-hmm.
Holding the base and then, you know, holding the other part to your ear?
Stretching out the cord. Oh. And then having it completely get ripped off the base.
Yeah.
Because there's too much tension.
You know, that might have been my biggest, I missed that. Mm. I also wanted a pager really bad at one point.
Did you ever have one, or was
no.
the technology was obsolete by the time you were of age?
Yes.
For that? Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately so.
I definitely did have a pager for a little bit.
Oh, word? Okay.
It was mostly...
All the chicks calling you, or what? Is that how... What did you use the pager for? And how old were you?
Probably 13, 14.
Okay.
I didn't have any real use for it, but it was... You know, I had older brothers.
Okay.
So that's how it went. It was like, oh, they're getting pagers? Well, I gotta get a pagers... Two, I'm a big boy
mm-hmm.
now,
mm-hmm.
but it was mostly just the, you know, 143s from my girlfriend at the time.
143?
I love you.
Wow. Could you send a message like that via the pager? I always thought
yeah,
it was
just any number, but that's the thing. You'd have to have numbers take the place of text.
Oh,
so you'd,
wow.
you know, you'd page someone boobs or
oh,
I love you or like
whoa.
The time to come over, or I guess it was supposed to be just your phone number, like call me back at this phone number.
I had no idea that was a thing. I
like
thought
how
it was,
pagers work.
Yeah, I thought it was just you called and it was like, oh, one, you know, 909's calling me,
like call ID.
yeah and I gotta call him back.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know you could do a number message. So I was with Brittany yesterday and I bought this calculator, and she asked me today, what am I doing? And I said, well, I'm going to spend all day playing with my super duper cool calculator that I'm going to spend using the rest of my life with. And then I took a picture of me spelling boobs on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why do I need this? Not to really insert my extracurricular life.
Well, obviously you do for
stupid.
Some reason. It's like graphing calculators in algebra.
Yeah.
Probably never going to use it again in life because you'll have a Excel or graph making.
It doesn't even have a fucking solar powered thing.
It's batteries?
Are you kidding me?
What does it take?
I don't know. I can't even fucking open the thing, dude. You gotta unscrew the bitch.
Oh, man.
Anyway, I'm very upset about this whole thing.
Isn't it weird that calculators are so dated they never bothered to make you know, math class calculators with USBs or rechargeable batteries. They're still operating on
right.
these old singular kind of, you know, like the batteries little electronic games or toys would
yeah.
take.
Yeah,
just
yeah,
like
yeah.
the little
The little
discs.
Circle ones,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like it seems like calculators
Such
are still...
Such a fucking waste of time.
Yeah.
Very 90s, the calc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like there ought to be an app now. Just like, oh, you need a graphing calculator?
There
it's,
is.
It's like a 2-bit technology.
But some people don't want you to whip out your phone.
Sure.
So, yeah.
School.
That's it. Yeah. So back to it.
Yep.
just had to get that rant out there for the world.
Yeah.
Tom Sizemore.
Right between the eyes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do very much like Tom Sizemore as an actor.
And why do we like Tom Sizemore? Because I know I've seen him in several things.
Saving Private Ryan.
Okay.
That's all I got off the top of my head. All
right.
But yeah, he's like an everyman kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, every movie kind of guy. Why do we like him? I was wondering that. And I think it's because he's smarmy enough and yet kind of likable.
Mm-hmm.
He never plays a fully rememberable character, obviously. but he can play a lot of roles. And I think in the 90s, that action style C-class character was important.
Yeah.
Why do you think?
Well, thinking back to Pulp Fiction or Tarantino movies in general, he reminds me of like a Michael Madsen kind of guy.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
like dark goon character actor. He's not going to be your lead, but, you know, he's going to make an impression.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, that's the first, there's so many actors in this that I just want to make sure we saw in the movie, but
I was talking
to my neighbors, and one of them, you know, is an actor, he's been in a lot of movies and stuff, and when I said we were watching Heat, he was like, Sizemore, and proceeded to share with me a story of a movie that they did together.
Oh, yeah?
That never got released here.
Oh,
and,
awesome.
And may never get released, in which he, I don't want to say behaving badly, but maybe he was dealing with some addiction issues during the filming.
I think he always was.
Is that something that is generally known about
yeah.
him? Okay.
Yeah, so much so, not to... We can go back to this. Mm.
I wasn't going to elaborate.
Okay.
I didn't know he was one of, like, the troubled actor.
No, yeah, and that's when his drug and alcohol abuse is what led him to being a womanizer and a wife beater.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, he's still a shitty guy, but those things, in his case, seem to go hand in hand. De Niro is credited as being someone who really helped him to get sober.
Really?
After them meeting in this movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
There you go.
That's cool.
So yeah, let's get back to all the actors. When the credits were going on, I was going crazy. I said, so yeah, totally forgot about Tom Sizemore.
Hmm.
It's bad. He's a shitty dude because he's such a fun actor. Totally forgot Ashley Judd was in this shit.
Yeah.
And Hank Azaria.
Mm-hmm.
And John Voight,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
Like, wow. And then Natalie Portman is the kid.
Yes. Natalie yeah. Portman from right off of Beautiful Girls, probably.
So actually, no, I looked it up. This was her second feature length movie. She was in the
professional.
Professional, then this one, and then probably Beautiful Girls.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was like working on prestigious films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. That's like great for her career.
Yeah.
You know? It's always nice to be a child actor that can look back on your previous works with some dignity.
Oh my god, yeah, you know.
They don't all make it to being as successful adult actors as
Correct.
A Natalie Portman.
Macaulay.
Yeah. He's doing stuff.
He's
working on the new Toe Jam and Earl game.
Is he really?
That's what I heard.
A word?
And he's got the pizza underground.
Oh my god, I love Toe Jam and Earl.
Yeah.
I was just throwing stuff away out in my patio and there I just threw an old Sega Genesis away.
You had one?
Yeah.
Wow.
I can go fish it out.
Oh, no, it's...
Okay.
It's okay.
You know, it had been outside for so long, and I figured I'll just spend the $40 or whatever it is to get one.
Yeah. Like, I got the Super Nintendo, the little mini reboot that comes with,
mm-hmm.
you know, 20 games installed, and I understand they're doing that with Sega as well, so...
Oh, they are? Thank God.
Yeah, if you really want it, it'll
oh, okay.
be available soon,
You see,
I think.
The Sega never really worked because they don't make hookups to televisions like that anymore.
Oh, damn. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, that's why I've literally been sitting on it for probably 20 years.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Well, shit, maybe you should fish it out and, you know, try to sell it to somebody.
Ah, okay. I don't.
You know, is window dressing for the next nostalgia movie in 2020.
Yeah.
Where some Ready Player One kid has, like, look at all my junk. Like,
yeah. I've got a Sega Genesis, and here's MLB 93. Like, oh. Yeah. Bloop, 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 bloop.
That's my experience with football, is I only know the lineup from the Nintendo Tecmo Bowl game. So I'm like, is Joe Montana and Ronnie Lott still on the 49ers, right?
That was a good game.
That was great.
Those are good games. That old baseball one. You know, one of my favorite Sega games was Echo. Did you ever
the
play
Dolphin.
Echo? The Dolphin one.
That had a great ambiance.
Hell yeah, it did.
Real
yeah.
spooky.
That was a great game.
Yeah.
Just a great fucking game.
You know, Sega was good about games where you just got to navigate pretty environments with ethereal music. I can't think of the names of others, but a lot of them had that Sonic vibe where it's like, you're just going to
mm-hmm.
go through the cool environment.
There was Shinobi,
mm-hmm.
the ninja one. There was Streets of Rage, which
Classic.
Was probably one of the best games ever.
Mm.
There was a like medieval fantasy one where you chose different characters. I can never remember the name of it. I have a feeling Legends is in the name.
Yeah.
All of the Sonics were great. Echo, Toe Jam and Earl,
mm.
Booger Man.
Uncensored Mortal Kombat.
Uncensored Mortal Kombat. There it is. Sega's a good game. I'm going to buy that little thing when it comes out. I had no idea they were doing that one too.
I heard rumors, but okay. Why wouldn't they? If Nintendo did it.
Yeah, fuck it.
They should. Sega's like the alt, the underdog mm-hmm. console, I
the
think.
The PlayStation so and Nintendo.
I think it makes a lot of sense for them to try and bounce back.
Yeah.
Like, we know you remember Nintendo, actually, but you remember Sega?
Actually, Nintendo might be releasing it. They sold a lot of their properties to Nintendo.
Really?
Like, you can get all the Mega Mans and the Sonics on the Switch.
Oh, shit. Yeah, and isn't Sonic in Smash Brothers now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's good. I'm glad it's not all being forgotten.
True. Both Japanese, so. Yeah. Seems right, I guess. Anyway.
So, we got Sizemore. We got Natalie Portman.
Yeah. We got Judd. We got Kilmer. Pacino. De Niro.
Henry Rollins.
Oh, yeah! And fucking Henry Rollins. So, allegedly, Al Pacino was very wary about hitting Henry Rollins.
And yes.
Rightly so. Yes. And Henry basically said to him, dude, nothing you can do is worse than what I've experienced before. And so much so, he goes on to say, a stuntman was used for the scene in which Benny is thrown through the plate glass window, but the rest of the scene is all Rollins, and it got a little rough. In an interview with Yahoo Movies, of all places, Rollins explained that Pacino was reluctant to hit him properly as he didn't want to hurt him. Quote, I said, look at his face. What could you possibly do that wasn't done by some guy in San Diego who had 5 rings on his hand? He goes, okay. So the next take, he grabs me by my hair so hard I almost started crying, and he hauls me off and whacks me across the face to where I could feel it in my toes.
Awesome. I felt really sorry for Henry Rollins in that scene.
Like, yeah.
I'm way too sympathetic to the actor behind the shitty character.
Sure.
Because, like, that character deserved a beating, but poor Rollins. He didn't... Just, like, I don't know. There's something about his face.
You know,
he didn't seem that bad in the movie. He was just there. Like, I didn't see him shoot or kidnap anyone or, like, do bad stuff. He was just present.
He's just a dude.
Yeah.
Just, you know, tangentially next to a bad guy.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's so many characters in this that I don't want to drag it out too long. Unpacking everybody's individual thing. But that was super cool to see Henry Rollins. Danny Trejo, obviously.
Obvi.
Again, felt so bad for him.
When he was bullet in the head.
Don't leave me like this, bro.
Did you know that Danny Trejo was actually an inmate at Folsom Prison at one point? And that the blood on the ground behind his head that they used, so that East LA house on stilts where Macaulay kills Trejo, was featured in Heat, Return to the Scene of the Crime, a DVD featurette. A camera crew visited the family that lives there now, who said they knew it was the Heat house when they bought it. In the movie, Macaulay shoots Trejo and a pool of blood forms around his dead body. Sure enough, the owners pulled up the carpet and were surprised to find the fake blood stain, which is a rather bright red, not brown like real blood. So a little piece of the history of Heat right here under the fold. Under the floorboards.
Yes, I think I remember reading that.
Amazing.
Too.
Amazing.
That's awesome. It's like Amazing. A murder house, but not.
Yeah, it's a fake murder house.
Yeah. Did you recognize Buffalo Bill?
Oh, I remember you telling me that Buffalo Bill was in it. Let me think. Who was Buffalo Bill?
The actor's name is Ted Levine. He played Bosco. He was on the cop team. He's one of those actors that you remember the Buffalo Bill thing, but then when you go back to the 90s and aughts, you realize that he worked a lot. And he's in a ton of things, and he's not always playing that eccentric of a, you know, fuck-off character.
Oh my god. Yeah. Yeah. I totally remember him in there. You know, he's got a very memorable face.
Yeah, strong features, and a great actor.
And I almost never connect him to Buffalo Bill in my mind.
Unfortunately.
When I see him in things.
That's all I can think of.
My god.
Furthermore, the De Niro love interest, Amy Brenneman... If you've watched The Leftovers.
What else was she in?
The Leftovers and Fear, the Mark Wahlberg 90s thriller that we might unpack in a horror movie category.
Okay. Because I remember her from...
She was on a show called Judging Amy, I think, where she played
That's
a judge.
My mom watched Judging Amy. Okay.
I never watched it, but my wife pointed it out.
There you go. Nice.
Furthermore, Dennis Haysbert from 24...
Palmer?
Do not re- was he the
President Palmer?
Yes.
Yeah, he was the line cook.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who had somewhat of an unceremonious
death
arc and death.
Yep.
That didn't quite land with me the way I think the movie intended for it to. Another good cop, Wes Studi. You might remember him for I'm gonna feel racist in assuming that he is some kind of Native American or Pacific Islander. He played Sagat in Street Fighter. He was in Last of the Mohicans, also directed by Michael Mann.
Oh. He's from a small town in Oklahoma, so I don't think you're that far off.
Okay, it's possible. No, great character actor, though. Usually yeah. plays very hard, serious characters, but he's been around for a while. Did you catch Tone Loc?
Tone Loc?
Yes.
Are you kidding me?
Not at all. There was a scene at a nightclub where I think Pacino was going to get information, or maybe it was De Niro. I watched this one a couple Pacino. Days ago.
Oh, yeah! Okay, yeah, yeah. I didn't even put that together. That was Tone Loc.
Like, I recognized his voice, and I'm like, where do I know this from?
Looked God it up, damn it.
And he was a detective in Ace Ventura.
Oh, my goodness!
Which came out around the same time.
Wow.
So I'm just going to keep going with this. Van Zandt, played by William Fichtner.
Yeah. What else has he been in? I know him from... I just know him.
Yeah, he's in a lot of stuff, but I couldn't tell you exactly what.
What is it? William Fichtner?
Fichtner.
It's a scary-looking motherfucker, this guy.
Yep, and he always... Yeah, Armageddon.
There Crash, Armageddon. Yeah, Black Hawk Down.
That dude works a lot.
Yo, they got a lot of journeyman actors in this.
Really?
I mean, right? You know, like, that's nuts.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, like, pretty epic. It was long.
It was long, mm-hmm. and I'll let you keep going.
Okay, I'll try to wrap this up relatively quickly. Okay, did all those people. McKelty Williamson played Sergeant Drucker. You might remember him from Forrest Gump the year before this came out. He played Bubba. Yep.
Yep.
Didn't even recognize him. And just coming straight out of that into this.
I think I even got... Well, actually, Forrest Gump was nominated that same year that Heat was.
Okay.
And he'd actually got snubbed that year. So he was luckily going to...
Hedged his bets.
Yeah, definitely hedged his bets. You know, despite you giving me the heads up about Bubba Gump being in the movie, completely forgot and didn't even put that together.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have. I was just doing my typical research and like, I recognize that guy.
Shocking.
Yeah, so many amazing players in this. And Michael Mann... Of course, as I mentioned, did Last of the Mohicans, Heat, went on to direct Ali, Collateral, Miami Vice, Public mm-hmm. Enemies, Black Hat, and that. Those are the ones that I'm familiar with that bring us up to date.
For being such a long movie, I did feel like the pacing was pretty good. It's this double-edged sword where you think, did I need all that background? But all of the background does help build a better climax and story.
Yeah. When you have stakes like this and as many characters, mm-hmm. I did appreciate that we at least got to spend some human time with them outside of the job or the criminal work or the cop work to sort of see these are all troubled people.
Yeah, it seems Michael Mann was very interested in showing their home lives.
Mm-hmm.
He really wanted to show their home lives. And that being said, maybe that's why we don't feel anything for Palmer. When he died, I was like, figured.
Yeah. Well, and no one really gets to let that soak in. You might have expected De Niro. You know, he came across as the most honorable of the thieves.
Correct.
He wanted to walk away, and he was always the smartest guy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And then he pulled Palmer into this and got him killed. And I, if I'm being honest, I missed the part where he died. I think I glanced down to write something during the heist and missed the part where he crashed the car died.
He didn't even crash the car. He got shot as he was driving the car.
Okay.
And then crashed the car.
Yeah.
And then the ensuing 10-minute shootout happened.
Which was beautiful. But on him, they only really establish him as, okay, he's on parole. He's got some shitty racist boss, you know, working as a cook.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets this opportunity to, you know, go Score. Do a job and make some money and then just, like, dies.
It's probably good for him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't seem like he enjoyed it very much.
Yeah.
And, like, the thrill of that.
But as far as trying to create a sympathetic bad guy character that will die, mm-hmm. and we're supposed to feel things for, I think they didn't stick the landing on it with him.
Like, I agree.
It's for the viewer, but not for the characters within the movie.
Correct, yeah.
It's, like, not seeing anyone kind of process it or have remorse for it.
I mean, I get why they wouldn't have in movie remorse. Mm-hmm. Stuff was going on, but I felt nothing.
Same. And I wanted, like, to feel something when they introduced him. Like, yeah. I haven't seen this movie in a while. Like, oh shit, I forgot this guy was in it. And like, yep. That's why I forgot, because the movie doesn't. Dies. Yeah.
I think Macaulay, De Niro's character, he's too honorable for his own good. There's a blurred line here for sure, but I think that he cares very much about the people that he cares about. And he really goes out of his way to not kill anybody unless he has to.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, he does go into situations where he might have to kill somebody, which is not honorable. But the respect that he had for his homie Val Kilmer, and he goes, I need this score. Well, all right. Mm-hmm. And I respect that. So maybe not honorable, but I respect him as a character.
Yeah. I guess the conversation him and Pacino have is basically like, this is what I love. This is what I'm the best at. I'm going to keep doing it, even if, you know, we have to shoot each other in the end. Mm-hmm. So for someone with that addiction, I think he was pretty honorable.
Yeah.
All things considered.
That particular scene, by the way, so they have been in movies together. Godfather 2.
Not in the same time period, though, right? They weren't acting
in
scenes together.
They were never together, yeah. So they were, and this is the first, that right there, the scene in the coffee shop is the first time they've worked together, and the first time they did that scene, there was no rehearsal.
I heard that as well, that they wanted it to be a little fresh and natural,
yeah,
and have that kind of tension and awkwardness.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
Watching it, and I had that in my mind, I was like, they really do seem like they don't know each other. And there's this air of like, I'm fucking Michael Corleone, you know? And it's like, I'm young Don Corleone, so fuck you.
Yeah.
It was a good scene, you know? And that's when I think that's the moment where, as we were saying, where he kind of becomes a caricature.
Mm.
They kind of, the very last tip of the iceberg, you know, on the downward slope. Cause he does the, like, you know, the face that he does.
Oh, De Niro, the pre Meet the Fockers. Kind of like, you talking to me? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, that. You know, it's like, okay, so we're just leaning into it. And
yeah.
I know we're not Italian mobsters here, but there's still a little bit of that in you. You can't really escape it.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was such a huge deal of this movie is, as we've hinted in previous episodes, combining these two legendary actors who have sort of always played not similar characters, but they were forces.
That, and they were in the same universes.
Yeah, you know, doing like mobsters
in
and
each
like troubled
orbit.
Urban. Yeah, yeah.
Totally.
So getting to team them up together in a movie like this, I think I read somewhere that they wanted to create a Goodfellas or a Scarface for that generation.
Okay.
Because those movies are much older. You got posters on your walls. And it's like, okay, all these college kids who love this mobster shit and De Niro and Pacino, like, what if we give them, you know, a 90s version of that and try to do the most faithful job we can of an epic crime movie?
It'll never be those.
No, it couldn't. It couldn't be. But it does, to some degree, succeed, I think, in attempting to be that. Just for kind of the scope and the production and the caliber of the actors that you have in it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then there's so much story in well-acted situations.
Mm-hmm.
And it does wrap up nicely. And there's a lot of foreshadowing. I haven't seen this movie in fucking forever.
Same.
And the minute that Wayne Grove shot that cop, I was like, that's right. This is all going to shit now because of this guy.
Yeah. And it's fun that it starts that way. It's like, here's the team. They do heists together. Yep. But from the first heist they do, there's this wild card character who's somehow so much worse than all of them. Like, unpredictable Nazi tattoos. He gets it in his mind to start killing hookers like halfway through the movie. And it's just like, Jesus, we were already dealing with bad guys.
He's just a bad dude.
Yeah.
He was just a bad motherfucker.
Mm. It was weird that he didn't just skip fucking town. Clearly these ruthless players have your number. You're on their list. Like, and instead of just getting out of town, he's like, no, I'm going to stay around and like fuck stuff up.
That's definitely someone who likes it.
Yeah, he like wants to be the boogeyman or just enjoys being evil.
Yeah, he's like the, what's his name from Blade? I'm gonna fuck it all up for everybody, even though we're bad guys.
Yeah, just bad to be bad. Clock's ticking.
Did you enjoy how seedy they made K-Town look?
That's something. I don't know. I hang out in K-Town a lot. Like, yeah. So to me, it doesn't seem like a seedy place today, but I guess back in the 90s, it sort of was. Or
I mean, I guess.
I guess there are still patches that aren't the most developed. But
my grandma will tell you you should never go to K-Town, but
really,
you know, come on.
Mm. But that's also kind of a movie set thing. They're like, okay, you're like New York, we're in Chinatown. Like, this is where you have gambling dens and stuff. And it's like, well, actually, it's just like a huge neighborhood with a lot of Chinese people. And naturally, there's, you know, some of them will be doing bad things. But
that's everywhere.
But movies, yeah, exactly. And movies just love to revel in the kind of unique, specific bad part of town, which is fun. But there weren't necessarily gangsters or anything. It was just a bad neighborhood where some shit went down.
Just a bad neighborhood, yeah. You know, you go back into the club. They had a club where you needed to get through. And that's where the CI was in some K-Town club. Sort of an exposition on, like, clubs and minorities are scary and seedy.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems to be a very convenient plot trope.
Yeah.
You know?
It is interesting today, though, like I said, because I don't feel any of that in
you're K-Town. Going to K-Town like, after this.
Yeah, it's a nice part of town. There's great restaurants.
There's food. There's beer.
If anything, perhaps less vagrancy than there is in the East Hollywood neighborhood I live in.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
It's not bad.
On a scale from 1 to 10, how much did you enjoy when De Niro and Edie are first drinking at her house? And they're overlooking the lights of the city.
Mm-hmm.
On a scale from 1 to 10, how much did you enjoy that fucking solo guitar?
Oh, man. I liked it. This movie seemed to be picking up on a 90s trope in that Lethal Weapon sense of action movie being sexy electric guitar. I thought it was a saxophone, and I'm like, oh, no, wait, it's an electric guitar.
It's
We're doing this.
Solo, yep.
I don't know. I did enjoy the soundtrack to this, if I'm being honest.
You didn't?
Did.
Oh, you did. Yeah, me too.
It was pretty minimal. I enjoyed the kind of book ending with a sort of ethereal M83 kind of soundscape that had like a sort of epic sadness to it.
There was way too much like 90s pad.
Earth music.
Yeah. Which I thought was interesting. And that's they were marrying that with the rock guitar solo.
Mm-hmm.
But 95% of it was enjoyable score.
Yeah. There was definitely a few moments with, like, Genesis-style drum solos, like, in place of, you know, some kind of tension building. And the lack of music during the heist.
True.
Like, I didn't realize that till halfway through, because it was, I think I mentioned to you, they recorded all the audio for that live. So you're not hearing overdubbed gun pops. This is literally, like, the blanks from, you know, what the audio they got live doing it, which might clue into why the mix was difficult to watch on a television, because this action sounds are just so loud and real, and then when there's dialogue, you gotta turn it up because it's much quieter. And these are all mixed to be watched in theaters because they're films.
The fold down was horrible, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that they spent 3 months training with British Special Service members?
Wow.
And Val Kilmer was so fucking good at that shoot forward, shoot backwards, reload, and shoot again, that they use that to train Marines.
I heard that too, yeah. Something about the proper protocol for a retreating maneuver. Like,
oh my god!
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy.
Nowadays, you'd have modern production, but that's something I loved about Michael Mann. There's so much handheld. You get a real gritty sense of being there, hearing things as you would if you were present. And that whole scene itself, like, just the amount of practicals and, you know, gun work and explosions and shattering mirrors. Even at the beginning when they bombed the armored truck.
Yeah.
And the ricochet.
Yeah, it killed all the other cars.
Yeah, it got all the other car windows around it. And yeah, just that kind of practical realism is a little rarer nowadays, but I really appreciated it.
Me too.
And I think that is one of the things that does stand up in this movie, despite the look of it being dated or the tactics maybe being dated. It's not a Mission Impossible.
But I think that's what gives it some heart. You're right. It's definitely not a Mission Impossible. But like you were saying, that is something that lets it stand on its own and through the test of time.
Mm-hmm. And it does deal with those limitations in a pretty timeless way.
Mm-hmm.
kind of the pieces of it. There's nothing glaringly ridiculous looking back.
So, we're going to segue. Cue Seinfeld bass. I'm going to give you three actors. And I want you to tell me, I want you to guess which actor said this is his favorite heist movie.
Okay.
And if you've already, if you know who it is, so I've got Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, George Clooney.
Damn. Well, I'm going to assume that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are the same person and say George Clooney.
Nice. No, it's Ben Affleck.
Really? Okay, Matt Damon was my second, so yeah. I was way off.
so much. Interesting. This movie, so much affected Ben Affleck that he used a lot of, it makes me want to watch The Town, because he kind of modeled The Town after this movie.
Okay.
He loves the heist. It's his The Heat. It's his favorite heist movie. Yeah.
No, it's good. I mean, they went for it, you know, as much of much downtime as there was in this movie. When you got the action, it was legit.
It was good action.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. That 10-minute scene is probably one of the better shootouts in movies.
It looked phenomenal.
Absolutely.
Totally random off topic. Have you had Trejo's Tacos?
Yes.
Good.
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh, they're fucking great.
They're solid.
Hey, it does a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Trejo's Donuts, Trejo's Coffee.
Yeah.
Trejo's Tacos. Did you know that Keanu Reeves almost played Val Kilmer's role?
Really?
Yeah. Probably would have been great.
I did not know that. How do you feel about Keanu Reeves?
I love Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got no problems with him. And I haven't seen that Jack White, John Wick, John Ryan.
Oh, John Wick. John Wick.
There you go. I haven't seen those movies, and I love Keanu Reeves.
They're fun.
He's just a good dude, man.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The guy's experienced fucking crazy tragedy and is a sweet soul.
Yeah.
And makes badass action flicks.
I do really appreciate that he stepped up to be an action star.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, everyone says the guy doesn't age, but like, he's got to be in his 40s.
I think he's in his 50s, right? He's got
to
be.
It's very possible. But yeah, the amount of training that he would have had to do for the Matrix movies or the John Wick movies, and I know he's done several other action movies that heavily feature combat and choreography.
54.
Oh my God. Have you heard the rumor that he's like a vampire?
No.
I encourage the listeners to check this out online. There's apparently some old portrait of, you know, some European duke.
Have seen that.
Yeah, yeah, and it looks just like him.
Yeah.
I know they have them with Nicolas Cage as well, just these familiar faces. There's only so many human faces. And yeah, everyone thought he was a vampire because he doesn't seem to age.
No, he does not. No, he does not. One other thought here. That scene when Al Pacino goes, "She's got a great ass," and your head is all the way up in it.
Yep.
Yeah, that was ad-libbed.
Yep.
Wasn't on the screen.
Saw that as well.
Motherfucker.
And that you had mentioned earlier, this Pacino, De Niro sort of becoming caricatures of themselves, just really big characters that chewed the scenery, and I definitely sensed a lot of that with Pacino in this. Guy's chewing a lot of gum. Had a couple outbursts. Outburst acting is what I call it when, you know, okay. It's like, "Give me all you got! Give me all you got!" Like,
you know, what I think's interesting is he was supposed to have a coke addiction in this movie.
In an early draft of the script.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet, instead, he's just Pacino who chews gum as his vice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is like cocaine, I guess.
But they sort of kept the volatility of the character.
How do you think he is as a father?
I have no idea.
Neither do I.
I'm assuming he's got kids?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
What if he... I mean, if he did, I bet you he's probably, like, really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And super quiet.
Maybe terrifying at times.
Probably terrifying. Can only imagine what that's like.
Yeah. Did you notice how fucked up Val Kilmer looked?
He did look fucked up.
Like, that scene where De Niro finds him at his pad.
Yeah.
You know, with no furniture. And, like, his elbow was so enormously swollen, and I was wondering, is this something in the movie that got cut? Because we established that he's a gambler, and I was always under the impression that there were cut scenes where he was maybe being beaten by the people he owed money to or something.
Oh, interesting.
Or that he
was... That's a great theory.
Yeah, but they never really address why he looked so rough or beat up, and I think my wife looked up that he got injured on the set of the Doors movie several years earlier, and perhaps does, in fact, have a permanent... inflammation on his elbow, like,
oh,
it broke and healed back the wrong way.
Huh.
And he was filming Batman Forever. Yeah. I think at the same time as this.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't this his strung out period?
I would imagine so.
In, like, real life?
Yeah, mid-90s, he was working a lot, and that's when you start hearing, if you have heard of The Island of Dr. Moreau that he did with Brando, there's a ton of fun podcasts and articles that kind of unpack what a shit show that was.
Oh.
Because I understood Val Kilmer became a Brando-like actor in the sense that he would only do one take.
Oh, you were telling me that.
And had a bit of a, you know, attitude or arrogance on set. This was his heyday where he was getting the most best work.
Makes sense.
So, yeah, that's probably where it all comes from.
Makes sense. And, you know, Tombstone and all those movies are right around now, too.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I mean, he's probably fine.
Yeah, he had a great run. And, he, you know, he still does work, but that was the...
That's someone who I think comes back
mm-hmm.
at, like, in, like, 10, 20 years mm-hmm. and has a Michael Caine, Cider House Rules sort of thing. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Or MacGruber.
Now that's a movie. All right? That is a fucking movie.
That'd be a fun one to do. SNL, you know, spin-off movies. Oh. We could get, like, Wayne's World. MacGruber might not be 90s, but maybe
it's definitely not 90s. We could
make an exception.
No, yeah, I fully agree.
So I'd be remiss not to touch on problems in movies from a social perspective, but I couldn't help but feel like all the women characters in this movie were shit. Not to knock the actresses, but let's be real. Like, you know, De Niro's love interest, Amy Brenneman, super hot, younger than him,
mm-hmm.
hits on him in a coffee shop, takes him back to her place. She's a graphic designer, art student who lives in a place with that fucking view.
Yeah.
That you were talking about. And
she did call it rundown.
Okay.
Yeah.
In 95, maybe. You know, Pacino's wife, just... you know, pilled out. The daughter was really sad and suicidal. Like,
mm-hmm.
even Val Kilmer's love interest. That was Ashley Judd,
Ashley
right?
Judd, yeah.
That she's featured so infrequently and is just kind of, you know, all of the women seemed to be damsels or victims of the more important men in the
yes.
movie. And for
yes.
the amount of time the movie tried to spend with them developing them, I couldn't help but get the sense, like, okay, these women are just here to give the men more stakes or humanity.
Exactly.
And they're not actually
yeah.
doing their own interesting things, even though we've spent, you know, at least a half hour of screen time with them.
What, so De Niro's love interest?
Amy Brenneman.
Amy Brenneman. She didn't want to be in the movie because she read the script and said, it's just another boys club with guns. Why do I want to be in this? You know, mm-hmm. This script doesn't work with me, but also B, you know, I'm a liberal and I don't really want to be supporting guns like this.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Mann had convinced her that, well, that's a great take to have because that's who you're going to be in the movie.
Yeah. No, it does translate.
No, it does, but to your point.
Yeah. I thought it was weird for De Niro being such a veteran gangster, you know, really by the book professional. He was so smart. You know, mission statement they have is like, mm-hmm. don't get attached to something you can't walk out on in 30 seconds
yeah.
or less, because the day might come when shit goes south and you gotta get the fuck out of there. He's lecturing Val Kilmer on that, and then a couple scenes later, he's met this girl at the diner, they had a nice night, he likes her, and I think he was saying to someone like, oh, I met a girl.
Yeah.
And kind of planted the seeds for that being a liability to him.
Yeah.
Which naturally, by the end, it does, and he does walk away in 30 seconds or less. But even when she discovers who he is and what he's into, and there was a bit of a hostage kind of thing where he's like, pack your shit, we're going. And she's like, wait, what? And it's like realizing all at once you're a criminal. And then I was like, what's happening here? Are we supposed to read that as a hostage situation where she's uncomfortable? And then it's like her good fortune that he can't get revenge and then escape the cops with her, that, you know, that scene where they're looking at each other and he walks the other way as Pacino's chasing him. Are we supposed to feel relief for her that she got kind of caught up in this shit?
I think now, I mean, I was like, oh, you're good, honey. You don't need to be a part mm-hmm. of this life. You know, I felt relief.
Yeah.
But I don't think that was the what they set out to make in the movie.
You think it was supposed to be a heartstring situation?
Yeah.
Where
De Niro, no! Yeah.
Yeah, so that like falls in again where they're
exactly.
just a tool to elaborate on the male's
I agree.
Pathos. Yeah.
And that's a very old Hollywood, sort of unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
You can do better.
Yeah.
You didn't need Pacino's wife, you know, being all up on him in the hospital. Despite the tragic incident, I get it. But still, she goes, do you think it'll might work out for us? And it's like, you're better than this.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to write you as someone who needs Pacino in her life.
Yeah. That dude struck out several times in marriage already.
Yeah, who cares?
How did you feel about Natalie Portman's character's suicide in terms of the movie? Did they handle that well?
I think it was just a tool for Pacino. Because we understand that Portman has anxiety, clearly.
Yeah.
And we see that Portman, you know, her bio dad is a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same way that we see President Palmer die, you know, we don't feel anything. When I saw she killed herself, I was like, what?
Where has she been for 2 hours?
Why? Yeah.
Yeah.
What is this doing? So it does come across as just a tool.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I kind of got the same impression. I did. I appreciated it being featured in a 90s movie.
Sure, yeah.
Granted, as a, you know, tool for Pacino, but that someone would explore that in general. Because mm-hmm. even today, suicide is something that we're only now
mm-hmm.
starting to try and have a serious discussion about, and it's really stigmatized, those sort of feelings.
Yeah.
So for a mainstream movie to include it, you know, it's half shock value, half, oh, Pacino's got it so rough, look at his fucking life, and he's trying to catch this criminal.
Yeah.
And deal with his, you know, stepdaughter trying to commit suicide. But the inclusion in general, I thought, not to make light of it at all, but I didn't think it was handled callously.
I agree.
Even if it wasn't...
It wasn't callous, that's for sure.
Mm.
I think my favorite... I mean, this is going to sound weird, but my favorite suicide scene is... and it's because of that Elliott Smith song that's playing in Luke Wilson's Suicide in the Royal Tenenbaums.
Needle in the Hay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Like, that one really tackled... is just numbness
mm-hmm.
and his sadness and his depression,
yeah.
You know, and that I think tackled suicide well. And then he came back, and then, you know, make your argument, which you will, about the quirky, like, hey, so you didn't die, between him and Gwyneth Paltrow later on. But that's a powerful suicide scene, and I didn't feel that in this.
Agreed. Yeah, because Tenenbaums made him a main character, and mm-hmm. we got to follow his, you know.
Exactly. So that's probably, again, another moment of the women being the tools.
Yeah. I think that's really the only flaw that I find in this movie. And again, there was an effort there. Like,
yeah.
They tried to have some representation. There was a variety of female characters.
Mm-hmm.
There was some good representation from black men in the movie, some great actors there.
Yeah.
But the delivery of giving them worthwhile characters that the viewer cared about sort of fell flat with those characters.
Yeah.
Sort of reminds me of I think I compared it to Chris Nolan.
Yes.
Where he has a tendency to make very male-centric movies, and it might not even be something he's aware of. But yeah, you get like a few women, but it's mostly... And, you know, it's always really well-executed, and the acting is amazing, and they're mm-hmm. smart scripts. But then you can't help but feel by the end, you're like, oh yeah, where were the women?
Yeah.
Like, there weren't any women in this. Yeah. So, a nitpick.
And I think it's fair. I think it was a little long. It's hard to find the time. But what you got, what I, and the time,
mm-hmm.
is a good movie.
Yeah, it was a good effort.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little too long.
Definitely a little too long.
But satisfying. If you're going for that kind of crime caper epic movie.
Yeah.
And I'm shocked it didn't get nominated.
Yeah, it got completely snubbed at the Oscars. But again, that was the year of fucking Forrest Gump, and...
It wasn't Dances with Wolves.
It was one that we watched, and it was like, oh, great, fucking Forrest Gump came out. Shawshank Redemption came out at the same year as Forrest Gump.
Oh, okay.
And can you imagine losing Best Picture of Shawshank to fucking Forrest Gump?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To Tom Hanks and going full R-word. Like,
yeah. Hard R-word.
I wonder if that stands up.
Forrest Gump?
Yeah.
All right, let's watch that. Of course that stands up.
We should. If we revisit...
Oscars.
There's a couple directors that I would definitely like to touch on that we missed in the last round. You want to do alt titles?
Let's do alt titles.
You got one?
Yeah. Hoo-ah! I'm just doing Pacino.
Attica, baby!
Yeah.
Attica! Cop Stalkers.
Hot.
And I'm sure there's a legal process, gathering evidence or whatever.
There is like a full fucking hour of that.
Yeah, but they were really watching them for a while.
Yeah.
And because it was such a long movie, there was a point where I was like, wow, how long have they been stalking the criminals? Like, where is this going?
Again, the movie is a little too long.
Sure.
Band?
The band I did for this one was Alice in Chains.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
Okay.
Rarely beautiful, but very well executed.
My God. That's excellent.
Yeah.
I used to know personally their manager.
Really?
And tour manager. Yeah, he was great. He would always be like, you want any Alice in Chains swag? I'd be like, not really, man, but you're cool. Really cool dude. I can't remember his name now, but awesome, awesome dude.
Nice.
And made me respect the band more because of it.
Cool.
Band, Dropkick Murphys, because, you know, I'm probably not going to revisit this movie for a long time, but they do a great job. And also, it was Macaulay, so it's the Irish take there.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, happy St. Patty's Day.
You're
going to hear this the week after, but we're recording it.
St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
What do they say? Don't try to catch my lucky charms.
Mm-hmm.
Are we okay with this?
I guess. I don't know. I know.
You're Irish, right?
I know, I'm sure a little bit. Sláinte, that's their cheers. So.
Oh, Sláinte. Well, Sláinte.
Glug, glug, glug.
All right.
Nice. I just want to give a quick shout out to Val Kilmer's hair.
Oh, yeah. Blonde?
And John Voight's hair.
Yep. Sick mullet.
And everyone's gigantic suits. Because, you know, I've been rocking the long hair and the low pony for a little while now.
Yes, you have.
It's nice to see some representation. I'm not saying it looked good.
There you go.
It's in like the same way that a mullet would be in an 80s movie, like Roadhouse or something. And you're just like... Fuck yeah.
I'm trying to get that, like, long-haired mullet.
Mm.
That's why I think I'm going to cut the sides.
Well, like, shave them up on...
Shave the sides and just let the top and back go.
It's very popular now. I am working my way up to a mullet myself. I'm going to try to bring him back or be the first person to die in a mullet-related hate crime.
Yep. And I'm Zach.
I'm Wade.
And this has been...
Are we doing quotes?
Oh, yeah! Oh, my God.
There's so many good quotes. No, it's okay.
It's not Stay Cool Forever yet, but we're staying cool. Want some pie?
You want to fuck with me?
Drop of a hat. These guys will rock and roll.
I'm alone. I'm not lonely.
What are you, a monk?
Give me all you got! Give me all you got!
Hannah's a hot dog.
I told you when we hooked up, baby, you were going to share me.
It rains, you get wet.
I need my angst. It keeps me sharp, on the edge, where I gotta be.
I'm Donald Duck, so you got something to tell me or no?
Ain't a hard time been invented that I cannot handle.
Put the television set down.
Where the fuck did this heat come from?
It's a free country, brother.
I'm not taking the heat.
I'm going to the hotel, gonna take a shower and sleep for a month.
I may be stoned on grass and Prozac.
I don't walk around like I'm dead. What are you, a fucking owl?
My name's Wayne Grow.
What do you want, a junior G-man badge?
Bon voyage, motherfucker.
I'm angry. Yeah, I'm angry, Ralph. You know, you can ball my wife if you want to. You can lounge around here on her sofa in her ex-husband's dead tech postmodernistic bullshit house if you want to, but you do not get to watch my fucking television set.
My final one. Let me have that shotgun.
Yep.
I didn't know cops were cool like that.
They're like, okay.
Everyone in this movie had a fucking AK.
Yeah, big weapons.
So casual.
Big guns in this one.
Bad guys had them. Good guys had them. Whew, a lot of guns.
What a movie.
Yeah.
All right, well.
So, yeah, this, it's no Godfather.
It's no Goodfellas.
It's no Scarface, but it comes damn close.
It was fun.
So, if you got 3 hours, check it out. It's by no stretch a bad movie.
And but, it's on Netflix.
Yeah. It's free. It's basically free.
Oh, yeah. And if you made it this far, you know, you can catch us damn near everywhere.
Yeah. What do we got? Podmust.
Podmust, Pippa, Stitcher, Deezer, Google Play, iTunes, whatever.
Yeah.
We're around. YouTube.
You can email us at staycoolforever@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts, any movies you'd like to see us do, if we missed anything.
Yeah, and we got a Patreon if you want to, you know, hook us up with a book or two.
Yeah.
Let us fix Wade's microphone stand.
We should put pictures of this operation to garner sympathy.
You know what? I'll put that on the Patreon. Like, this amount so we can get Wade off of this.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You'll see what we're talking about one day.
One day.
All right, thanks for listening. Stay cool forever.
Stay cool forever.